Blog Talk Radio. For tuning in tonight. It's February 24th, 2019 on a sweet Sunday evening. And I'm Tanya Hathaway with TNT Tanya Talks, or as I refer to more lately, Tanya Talks, forgive me, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network. So the legal disclosures, as I'm going to say right away, are that neither myself, Marty Oakley, Stephen Burke, any of the affiliates with 89.9 FM, TS Radio Network, my show, or any rebroadcast can be held personally or otherwise liable for any error of content or any misstatements. That being said, as you well know, we vet and we get to know our guests that come on quite well. So we have yet to be challenged and don't plan on being challenged with the content of anything being shared. And when something is brought out by mistake or mentioned by mistake, we are the first ones to correct. So please, if there's anything that you feel that needs to be corrected that I might state, feel free to let me know through emailing me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. And here we go. So thank you so much for tuning in. And a hello to my mother in New Hampshire, who has been just inspiration and faith and patient, kind, loving, and understanding with what this is really all about. We are just 18 days when the clock strikes midnight tonight away from our rally in Oklahoma City. Okay, this rally is hosted by Journeys to Justice, and Tina Gortz has been a key organizer getting this thing together. And this particular rally, first of many, which will be quarterly, is about wrongful conviction. It's about prisoner abuse, even about people who have died in prison, and there are no good explanations behind it. There are many that that's happened to or at the hands of. We also are addressing the 85% rule. We are also addressing, did I say prison abuse? Reform. We're addressing things that have to do with what the heck is going on with these wrongful convictions, with what's going on inside the prisons. Why is there excessive sentencing? Why are the parole and pardon board not even letting inmates that have applied for accommodations to the next level, when on the surface at least, it appears as though there's every reason to allow it? Where's the transparency? Well, we now have, there's now a new governor, Oklahoma, Governor Stitt, who, oh, we can all exhale about this, replaces Governor Fallon. And Governor Stitt has made it a point to address these things that are seem to be going wrong and how to make it better. Will he say, amen, Tanya, you're right, there's public corruption? No, I doubt he will, okay? But what this all does, circle around to when things happen on purpose, systematically, when the wrongs are not made right, it really is as a result of some kind of public corruption. Because unless it's too late and somebody's already been executed, okay, or, you know, and those wrongs could have, should have, would have been made right, okay, then they need to be. So it's when there's prosecutorial misconduct, when there's when the forensics are not being addressed and added into court documents, or an appeal sits for years and there's no answer given newly egregious information, that would not have that victim of injustice sitting in prison. Or when, again, there's prosecutorial misconduct, and as in Richard Glossop's case, and Leah is here with us tonight, Richard Glossop's husband, you know, why is it that this information is being suppressed? Why will you not, why will you, you know, jump off that bandwagon of having named somebody just because it makes you look bad, and stay on that bandwagon at the cost of somebody else's life when there's other compelling information, to say the least, that would release innocent men and women from life sentences, from prison, from, even if it's a sentence that's in the future of it being, you know, of that being fulfilled. Why do these people remain ignored? So this all circles around to, you know, unfortunately, far too often, what about my election? What's my rate, you know, of being able to prosecute somebody properly? I mean, people are graded in the public eye as well as their numbers, as well as their numbers. And it could be at the cost of you. Next. So it's time to step up, stand out, and address the public corruption and do something about it. It's not about one case. It is about all of these different matters combined together, from tampering with evidence on the police level, from family court ridiculousness, from theft estate, guardianship, children being ripped away from families, from elderly abuse being ripped away from their loved ones that will look after best for them, and they're being financially controlled by people who have no interest in them whatsoever other than the money that can be taken from them. So let's keep in mind what this all circles around to and what we are doing about it with our voices, with our rallies, with these invitations, the people that will ultimately have to show up and make a difference. Thank you for listening to my little rant. And I'm going to say, hey, Leah, how the heck are you doing? Welcome to our show.
I'm good.
How'd I do?
Good. Very good.
Well, it's nice to have you on with us, especially, you know, right before this rally that we're having in Oklahoma City on March 14th, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., where Leah is one of the speakers who will be speaking about her husband's incarceration, his wrongful conviction, and the fact that he has been on death row, and literally he has been within minutes, or close to that, you can straighten me out on that, of being executed, of actually being executed. So this is a very high-profile case. So Tina, can you please let us know your background and your history with learning about the case and why it hit you so hard, and let these listeners understand where you came into play and with all this, and you are now married. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I did a lot of research on it, but probably in the end of 2014, going into 2015, just because it was all over the media. And then when the documentary came out about him in 2017, I started paying more attention to it. And after doing a lot of more research and then reaching out to him, I realized that this was something huge. It was almost unbelievable. I almost thought there's no way this could actually be a true story. And it is. So that's what made it even crazier, is the fact that I really thought, like, something doesn't add up here, because it was so just crazy that this actually happened to him. But I did a lot of research on it before I even wrote to mm-hmm. him, definitely.
Okay. And so what, when you wrote to him, what did you expect out of that?
Nothing, honestly. I wrote to him just with the intent of just letting him know that, like, if he ever wanted to talk about anything, I was here. I didn't write to him necessarily, like, praising him for how strong he was or amazing he was or nothing like that. I wrote to him just to kind of be a friend and just want to get to know him as a person, because he's a lot more than just this case. So he said that's one thing that prompted him to want to write back to me. So that was really my only intention, just to be
right.
a friend and get to know him. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And right. And then somehow over and you know, people with empathy, they start to realize, you know, and after your eyes were wide open to what the heck this was all about, that poor guy.
Exactly. It's something that, like, once you're aware of that it's happening, it's impossible to not think about. You can't just shut it off. So once it was in my mind and he was in my mind, it was impossible to, like, forget about.
Right. So, so as a result, you got to know each other over a certain period of time, and you got married in September, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This past September.
So when you got married in September, mm-hmm. can you let our audience know, you know, did you feel that you would ever see him a free man?
I did. Yeah, definitely. I do think that he will be free very soon and we'll be able to start our life as, I guess, what a normal married couple would be. I do think that I'll definitely get that probably sooner than later. Yeah, it was a big day. It was a really big day.
Okay, so now let's go back again a little bit. So can you share with our listeners who don't know what this case is all about, just what this case is all about, and what made it so, you know, as a result, it became very high profile, and
mm-hmm.
and what the reality is of what happened.
Yeah, basically he was convicted of murder for hire, of murdering his boss, who was a motel owner. The self-confessed killer, the one who actually did the murder, changed his story about 8 different times, and it wasn't until he was probed by the investigators during his interrogation, he said that Rich, my husband, is the one who put him up to it. And in exchange for the actual killer avoiding the death penalty, he testified against Richard, who in turn received the death penalty, and that was the only reason he was convicted, was the testimony of this guy. So that's how it gained a lot of attention, because of the fact that there was no evidence at all. And then the fact that Rich never even had a parking ticket. He's the only one on Oklahoma death row of the 46 guys down there who's never had any prior felony convictions either. So it goes to say who this perfectly good law-abiding citizen now is on death row. It was just a lot of factors that made it, a lot of people question it.
Mm-hmm. And why was that seed planted regarding his involvement in this to begin with? So how did it get to that point where you have somebody who has confessed to being the killer
mm-hmm.
himself, right? But so he claims that it was Richard, your husband, who hired him?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what was the claim why Richard hired him to kill the owner of the hotel? Can you give his name?
Barry Vantries.
Okay. Barry Vantries. Okay, so he was murdered, and mm-hmm. and so the self-confessed killer says that he was hired by your husband to murder him. Why?
For money. There was supposed to be a payout where Justin, the actual killer, would get paid by my husband to do this. And Justin had said that there was money that he would be able to steal that him and Rich would be able to split. And once it was all said and done and the money that was found, it had nothing of Richard's on it. It had Justin's blood on it. It had Barry's blood on it. It was Justin's money that he had already had. Richard had nothing to do with it. But the ploy that he said was so that he would get paid a few thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I'm just kind of curious, how much money actually was stolen?
It wasn't a lot. I think it was like a little bit under 2,000.
Right. Right.
Yeah, not
so
a lot.
So here's Richard, never even had a parking ticket. And now it doesn't mean that somebody can't snap or something else isn't going on there, right? But
mm-hmm.
he's never had a parking ticket. And can you give me a little bit of his work history, how long he was working for the employer, and if there was any kind of discourse between them all at all as far as what has been testified to or what you know the truth to be?
Yeah, he worked for him for quite some time. It was over a year, and there was never any problems. His boss liked him. He liked his boss. He actually received, like, monthly bonuses on top of his paycheck every month because his boss was so happy with the work that he was doing there. So they never had a history of any problems. They both thought highly of each other.
And it's my understanding that he actually did a nice job with making the hotel more appealing and whatnot. So it seemed to be, that he was doing a good job at what he was doing, and he was actually appreciated for it.
He turned it around. Yeah.
He turned it around. Okay. All right. So, so now we've got this guy, Justin, how did Justin and your husband know each other prior to this happening? What was their connection together?
Yeah. So my husband was the manager of the hotel, and Justin was a maintenance person there. So my husband was essentially in charge of Justin, telling him what tasks to do and where to clean up certain things and giving him jobs to do. So yeah, they knew each other because they were at the same workplace.
Okay. And did they converse at all outside of the workplace? Did they, get to know each other well, or do things together as a habit?
Outside of the workplace, no. They were cordial to each other at the job. Justin, he would be there for a little bit, then he would leave for days on end, then he would come back. So they didn't really have a friendship or anything. It was more just a professional relationship.
Right, and they did fine. There was no concern as far as Richard was concerned, like with any character issues or somebody just murdering somebody's issues.
He knew that Justin was a little odd. He had some issues. He was young, so he knew he was a little strange. There was some strange things about him, but he didn't think anything like this would ever come from just a few little quirks he had.
Okay, so let's talk about let's talk about the real killer, his history, his background. Mm-hmm. Like, what was up with him?
Well, he had originally come from Texas. From Texas. He was only 19. He had a long history of drugs and drug dealing, using all of that, and that's what the money that he that was what his reason for killing this person was. What the truth actually of the matter is, he killed the owner for
the
money for drugs. Yes, for money for drugs to pay back his drug dealer. So he had an issue with drugs, which we think was a big factor in what happened. Also,
but so these were hard addictive drugs. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And did he have any convictions or charges against him prior to that you know of? Or, I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty
hit.
Sure he was.
Very
yeah,
sad.
He was arrested before drugs. Yeah, he was only 19 at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so how old was your husband, Richard Glossop?
He was 34.
He was 34. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So this is somebody that Justin could have looked up to and, you know, so he worked for him at the hotel. So when did Richard's name come into actual play though? You know, I know when we had spoke before, it was something that it's my understanding that the prosecutor started naming your husband. And so why?
Yeah.
Okay, investigators, forgive me. So why is that, do you think? And there's in particular one investigator that seemed to have a chip on his shoulder against Richard.
Yeah. Yeah. So when the incident first happened, and Rich was at the scene, he was questioned there and then was told he was going to be brought to the police station just for it to be questioned more. And right, for some reason, no one really knows, but right off the bat, the investigators, especially the one, were pretty hard on him. So obviously, Rich, who was obviously scared, didn't know what was happening, never been interrogated before. He was defensive. He was sticking to his story that he had nothing to do with it, and they didn't like the fact that he was so defensive. So then, when talking to Justin was giving them a million different stories. So that's when they start saying, well, you know, Rich is putting this on you, or Rich is going to let you hang out for this by yourself. And that's when his initial name, the Gator, is saying it to Justin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that kind of wound up sticking. Like,
yeah,
do you think that Justin was like, oh yeah, well then I can make this not about me. I don't have to take the big hit for it, or, you know, what?
They told him, they said, Rich is going to let you take the fall for this, and you're going to be the one, you know, who gets all the blame and locked up forever. And so that's when he started saying, no, I'm not going to take it. Rich told me to do it. That's when the seed was planted, and they offered him the deal of if he testifies against him, he won't get the death penalty. And that's ultimately what he took.
That is something else. That is something else.
Yeah.
So he took that deal, and, you know, so Richard's like, no way, I didn't do this. What are you talking about? You know, I don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. And so maybe the investigators thought that they already had it figured out before they really did. Who knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but somehow Richard's name got dragged into this without any evidence whatsoever. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
As far as hiring Justin to murder Barry.
Yeah.
How was Barry murdered?
He was bludgeoned with a bat.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was hit over and over again, and then, yeah, he ultimately died from his... But he did fight back. So it wasn't, like, quick right away. He did fight back, yeah.
That's very, very sad. Very, very sad.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that, you know, justice is truly served here for a number of reasons. Now, can I ask you, so we've got Justin in prison, and would you like to share where he is in prison?
Yeah, he is Joseph Harp, I believe.
Okay. And he is there for a life sentence without possibility of parole, or?
Yeah, life without parole. Yeah.
Life without parole. Okay. All right. And your husband is there with a death sentence, in essence. And we're gonna get back to that a little bit later in these very close calls. But I'm going to ask you, you know, because I know that you've immersed yourself, obviously, in his case. So what do you think went wrong when it comes to the legalities or the illegalities, the misconduct, the public corruption goes that actually sent your husband to be killed, to be executed? Or close to it. So what do you feel went wrong that needs to be made right?
I think the main thing that went wrong is that the investigators who were investigating did not properly do their job. And that's one of the things that when me and my husband do talk about our case, his biggest issue is that he says if they did their job back then, if they properly looked into the financial situation, the actual crime scene, the background of everyone, he never would have spent a night in jail if they did their job. So he thinks that just the failure to really follow through every lead. They received multiple leads, the investigators did, that night saying so-and-so heard this, or someone else heard this, and nothing was ever looked into.
Are you willing to share some of those leads with us? Are you able to?
Yeah, the main ones were that they heard more than one voice in the room, or they heard, different voices, that was mainly, and no one ever looked into that. Or they heard, yeah, it was just different voices that they heard, or Justin had told, when he was in the county jail, he had told people that Richard had nothing to do with it. No one investigated that either. It was once they had Rich, they stopped all of it. So that's the biggest thing. If they really just followed through on the leads or looked into all the different avenues of it, he never would have been arrested to begin with.
Okay, so where was Richard when this happened?
When the actual crime happened?
When the actual crime happened, yes.
He was sleeping. He lived at the motel at a time, during this time, in a room. So it was the middle of the night. He was sleeping, actually.
Okay.
He was woken up, yeah.
And that was a normal time for him to be sleeping, or is the hotel like where, you know, you just catch naps when you can until somebody rings the bell, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, the reason he lived there was because people did check in the middle of the night and stuff, but for the most part, yeah, it was like early morning hours, so he was always asleep by that time, yeah.
Right, okay. So there was nothing out of the ordinary going on that night. It's not like he left the hotel, so he wouldn't be there at the time.
No.
But, okay. So what other leads were not given an opportunity to be brought forward?
Well, the financial part of it, where Rich had said over and over again that he didn't take any money, because they had tried to say that he was embezzling from Barry for years or something, and he was trying to say that never happened. You can look into the motel's bank accounts, his bank accounts. They never did that. And then finally in 2015, his attorneys hired a forensic accountant who actually proved that there was no embezzlement. So if they had just
Thank
did that
you.
Back then...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would have realized, so.
Right, and so, but that has not turned anything around as a result so far. So now, would you say that, okay, so the investigators did not do a good job investigating. They did not follow up on leads. So this case was brought forward to the prosecutor with what the investigators compiled, right? A report with the witnesses that they wanted him to hear about, the statements that they wanted the prosecutor to hear about. So when the prosecutor obviously decided that this needed to be tried, who was there telling the prosecutor, no, you got this all wrong?
No one. No one was.
No one. So it's my understanding there was an attorney, and he was the only attorney that was not actually a public offender. So the first attorney was hired to defend Richard Glossop. And so just, I mean, without, like, you know, going crazy over it, I certainly share some things. Do that for sure, because we want to find out the events of things that went wrong so that our listeners can understand this story and how he could possibly be in there when there was so much to prove that it wasn't him to begin with. So what happened with this first attorney other than ineffective counsel, clearly?
It was his first capital case. He had never done one before. He didn't really look at the issue at hand. He went into all these weird conspiracy theories of what happened that night and kind of like took the jury on a little ride of all these crazy stories that were not relevant at all. And the main thing was he wasn't prepared. And I know Rich said that he walked into the courtroom and saw the defense had all this evidence and all these boxes and all this stuff that was obviously fabricated, but they didn't know that at the time. And then his attorney walks in with one little box, and he knew that there was no way that he was going to be properly defended, and he obviously wasn't.
So the attorney was in way over his head.
Yeah.
Fair enough to say. And apparently there were other matters that he had, we was hired for, and ultimately there was this there was this ongoing issue of ineffective counsel that was really causing harm, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and ultimately he was disbarred?
Yes, he was disbarred, yes.
So Richard was found guilty, he was sent to death row, right? Okay.
Yeah.
This attorney is ineffective. What happens then?
So then he was sent to death row. He started some of his appeals, and then he was given a second trial a few years later with new attorneys, new evidence, and ultimately they were
public defenders, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, with them, it was more not really doing their due diligence and properly investigating. They did better than the first one, but it still wasn't properly done. And then there were other issues at hand that just led to him being convicted a second time.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, this is far too often happening with court cases and public defenders. These public defenders are, they're really kind of, they're pretty much part of the system itself. You know, the judge recommend a public defender. Public defender goes and talks with a prosecutor. And, you know, like it or not, sometimes these relationships happen. They want to get a case through, don't want to hurt the prosecutor's winning streak, God forbid. Pressure is put on people. This is just, these are huge conflicts of interest within our system that make it easier for things to go wrong and public corruption, okay, at the cost of literally people's lives.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay? All right, so let's talk about how close Richard was to being executed and what happened there.
The closest he came was September 30th, 2015, when he was given a stay past his execution time. So his execution time came and went, and he was still alive, and then the very last second, because of the wrong drug, that was the closest that he came.
Mm-hmm.
By a few minutes,
he was given a stay. And do you want to share what really helped that stay occur?
Yeah, so that last stay, they had the wrong drug because at the time Oklahoma had a 3-drug cocktail, I guess, that they were going to use, that they used, and they had the wrong drug for the guy who was executed before Rich, and no one said anything. And then when it's Rich's turn, someone did come forward and say they have the wrong drug.
So what
Everyone
happened
knows
when
we
the
have
drug
the
was wrong before Rich? I've got to interrupt you. I apologize. I shouldn't, but I am. So what happened when the guy before Rich was given the wrong drug?
So he was it wasn't the right sedative that you needed. So he was essentially paralyzed, but he was able to feel everything that was happening. But instead of writhing and screaming around like the guy before him, he was just paralyzed because of that drug. He wasn't able to move. So you couldn't tell that he was suffering, but you would know by the autopsy and the amount of drugs that were in his system. So it was the paralytic, essentially, that you would be feeling like you're on fire and burning, but you wouldn't be able to show it. So that was the issue of the wrong drug.
Now, some people might be saying, okay, well, the guy deserved it or the girl deserved it, whoever was on, you know what I mean? Somebody might say, well, too bad, they must have taken somebody's life, or they took some, they did this, they did that, they did the other thing, okay? So, you know, whatever, everybody can have their own opinion, but there are humane ways for justice to be served, and that certainly wasn't one. And what's even worse, humane, is the fact that there is somebody on death row that is an innocent man and about to be executed. So it was stopped because somebody spoke up, right?
Yeah, they spoke up, and at that time, they had no choice but to give a stay of execution, and then the moratorium was placed, and then there was a whole investigation, and now they were stripped of their protocols, so now they essentially have to build up. The reason there's no executions now and hasn't been since then was because of this incident and the corruption that they found of all these people who knew that they had the wrong drug and were going to use it anyway.
Okay. So they're going to use it anyway. So, and there's currently how many people on death row, Leah?
There's 46, and 16 of them have exhausted all their appeals and everything. So 16 are in line for executions if they ever start back up.
Okay, so I recently saw a press release or something I want to call them names right now, but I'm going to bite my tongue. Press by the still, unfortunately, Attorney General Mike Hunter. Okay.
Yes.
Where he was saying that, you know, they are going to, you know, go forward with this, but they are looking into different drug companies for assistance with it. But that's kind of hard, and can you tell me why that's been a little bit hard for this to, you know, commence as Attorney General Hunter is wanting to do?
It's been hard because they want to try a new method with nitrogen hypoxia versus lethal injection, and the issue is none of the drug companies want to supply them with these drugs. They don't want to give them anything that would cause harm to their company, because then, of course, their company, if they supply the drugs to start killing these people, they're going to face a lot of repercussions from anti-death penalty supporters or family members or people who aren't for that. So no one wants to supply Oklahoma with the drugs to get things up and running. That's the biggest issue.
Okay. Okay. Do you know how many states do have the death penalty at this point?
At this point, it's not very many. I want to say it's maybe 10, 15, around there.
Okay. Okay. Now, and now the standard of guilt that must be met in order for somebody, first of all, to be convicted of a crime such as murder, right? This beyond a shadow of a doubt business, these prongs that must be met in order to find somebody guilty, is very different than when you're suing somebody for damages or, you know, it's very, very different. And that in that case, it's more like within a reasonable doubt, okay? But we're talking about somebody's life. This is life or death, and beyond a shadow of a doubt. So there is not one bit of proof that was actually brought forward other than hearsay. It's my understanding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any DNA that leads Richard to the murder of the hotel owner?
Nothing.
Okay.
No DNA, no evidence at all.
Can you guys believe this? Can you guys actually believe this? I tell you what, I never would have, a few years ago, but believe it. And many of our listeners are like, yeah, unfortunately, I believe it. You know, we have got egregious behavior going on, and we're in a whole different society now in far too many places. But we're just talking about Oklahoma right now. And as you know, you're speaking with several others, of course, at the rally. And so we've got, you know, like another wrongful conviction, and gratefully, Daniel Holtzclaw has not been sentenced to death, and he's not on death row, but pretty much he has been given a death sentence, you know, so to speak, for multiple years of life sentences. And so we have some great support from several, high-profile people, of course. You know, I know in the case with, and we'll get back to that again, with Richard, after the next time that he was supposed to be executed, there were a couple of people, and I will step back into that in just a minute. But, like, in the case of Daniel Holtzclaw, we've got Michelle Malkin, who has done this whole series and then some and then some and then some on the proof that Daniel Holtzclaw needs a new trial, and the likelihood of his innocence is glaring given everything that has been brought forward. So I'm going to quote, I just love the way she talks, and I just love the way she puts things out there. I'm going to quote something from Michelle Malkin, okay? And this has to do with Oklahoma City, okay? In 2018, okay, so Michelle Malkin, as you know, she's a strong voice for Daniel Holtzclaw and wrongful convictions. So what she said is, okay, so she, in 1993, there are 35 wrongful convicted Oklahomans that have been exonerated, okay? And that's according to the National Registry of Exoneration. And 11 at the reign of prosecutorial terror and error and forensic error by the late Oklahoma County District Attorney Bob Macy, and everybody's not ringing a bell? Okay, back to the quote, Bob Macy, and rogue Oklahoma City Police Department crime lab analyst Gilchrist, which resulted in at least 11 wrongful convictions, according to the Innocent Project. So these two people right there in Oklahoma City, what we know, according to the Innocence Project, 11 wrongful convictions, okay? That's what we know. Think about what we don't know, people. Think about those that don't have others that are coming out to voice somebody else's innocence or concerns that there was tampering, an unfair trial, prosecutorial misconduct, investigators failing to really do their jobs, where we have the politics as a priority over a human life. Okay, so that's what we know. Okay, just think, everybody, about all these other areas in Oklahoma, which, boy, oh boy, I guess I could start talking and not stop. We need a whole lot more than an hour and a half show, okay, where this is happening. This is happening all over the place. So, and which you'll hear some of those stories when you come to the rally March 14th. Okay, so we've got this attorney, okay, who wrote an article by Oklahoma criminal appeal lawyer Kevin Adams. I just want to know what you feel about this and how this, you know, resonates with you and listeners out there. Okay, so prosecutorial misconduct when prosecutors cross the line. Prosecutorial misconduct is an issue that comes up mainly on appeal. Prosecutors have broad power and courts typically will not interfere with the exercise of their discretion. However, that power is not unlimited. So it's not supposed to be unlimited, folks, okay? As the United States Supreme Court has admonished, a prosecutor, quote, is in a peculiar and very definite sense the servant of the law, the twofold aim of which is that guilt shall not escape or innocence suffer. He may prosecute with earnest and vigor, indeed, he should do so. But while he may strike hard blows, he is not at liberty to strike foul ones, unquote. Okay? So you all can look that one up. That comes from Berger versus United States. Okay, Google that, and then all these little lines after that, okay? So, and there are other cases where the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals found prosecutorial misconduct and granted both of these cases. They were issued on the same day, and both of these cases were out of Tulsa County, another big city, okay? Tulsa County. And involves the same issue, prosecutors misstating the law as it related to the meaning of a life sentence. And then there are, anybody who's taking notes, we've got Bramlett versus State, B-R-A-M-L-E-T-T versus State. We have got Glendell, G-L-E-N-D-E-L-L, DeWayne, D-W-D-E-W, A-Y-N-E, Lee, Glendell DeWayne Lee versus State. Okay, we can go on and on. So it seems as though there are patterns with the same people that are involving, I'll say it, try to prove me wrong, sue me for libel, okay, public corruption. You sue me for libel, I get to prove who's really criminal. Okay, so how do you feel about this when it comes to when the prosecutor got involved and their unwillingness? I mean, who would want to do that, right? Who would want to knowingly or with that shadow of the doubt send somebody to death row? What on earth are these people thinking?
That's what I really don't understand, because everyone in Oklahoma who are in powers of authority or position, everyone knows that his innocence has been proven, and especially in 2015, like, I don't understand why, if there's this person who has this much question around his case, why you're so ready to kill him. Why would you not want to look into it and find every single detail so you wouldn't end up killing an innocent person? That's what I don't understand, why no one would do the work knowing that there's this big question mark around this case. It's crazy to me.
It's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I think that do you know how many years Macy remained the lead on this charge after Richard Glossop?
It was a long time after, probably up until right around the time he died. He was the main person, but so it was the whole time, his whole incarceration, basically.
Okay, so how long has Richard been in prison?
This is in January. It started his 22nd year, so we're in 22 years.
So I would venture to say Bob Macy wanted to be reelected. That could be a question mark there. Okay. He wanted to be reelected. Unfortunately, we're dealing with white collar crime here. And there is no way, in my humble opinion, and I'm not an attorney. I didn't bring that up. I'm not an attorney. I can't give any kind of advice. I can't, I am an advocate, a host, you know, all that other stuff. But damn, I've had my hands, my eyes and ears into this really deep for a while now. If it's my understanding, and according to the Constitution and our Bill of Rights, that regardless of who the heck you are or think you are, that when, if you're a prosecutor, if you're a judge, if you're whatever who is supposed to, according to the state law, have immunity, okay, Congress too, as far as I'm concerned, anybody on this good earth who acts outside of the confines of their job. Okay, so I understand immunity for a mistake. Absolutely, I get that. We're human. Okay, so make it better, right? Fix it.
Yeah.
Fix it. All set. But when you've got people being sent to death row, life in prison, when there is refusal to accept new evidence, when you have pretty much browbeaten other people into or paid off other people so that a conviction is done, and God forbid, you know, it should come to their attention that, oops, well, I'm not going to do anything now. You know, this is all being reported in mainstream media. I'm coming up for election. Oh, you got a whole alliance. This is not, no immunities. Immunities. There's no such thing when you're acting criminal in a position where you are supposed to act lawfully, that immunity should apply to you. So to you, the bad prosecutor, to you, the criminal prosecutor, to you, the criminal judge, you do not have immunity. And that's what people need to fight. Because, I'm sorry, our Constitution trumps it all. And if you don't like it, get out there and amend it. So that is my opinion. So, okay, what happened now when it comes to, okay, so thank God he was saved, somebody stepped up, he's not lethally injected, he's alive, then he's faced with death row, with being executed again. What happens?
Yeah, his last time was the drug situation. So once that ended, he had new attorneys at that point, so he was back to having to adjust back to, I guess, normal. Life's not really normal on death row, but he had to adjust to now his normal life in his normal cell, and his attorneys have been at work ever since that last drug incident.
Okay. Then I got it mixed up. So can you just let our listeners know what happened prior to that?
The first day his attorneys that he had at the time were able to get him a stay, just a regular one through the courts. And then the second stay is when he had so much publicity, I guess, surrounding it. They gave him a stay because there was so much talk of his case and they didn't want to make themselves look bad. And then the third stay was the drug situation.
Okay. So on the second stay, do you want to share publicly You know, and again, you know, we're not a political show. You know, we have, you know, politics seem to come into play. But the only thing time when we talk about politics is when it comes to, you know, who the people are, you know, and or why they would be doing these things that they're doing. So we're not talking parties or anything like that, or, you know, what everybody's, what somebody's whole belief is in, you know, whatnot. But you had Susan Sarandon and who else come to Richard Glossop's side and made it, your husband's side, and made it very, very public. And, you know, from our conversation before, you know, your feelings and understanding of why, you know, just what did they do to help him stay alive that second time? And why do you think that they actually gave a stay?
Yes, Susan Sarandon spoke publicly about him. Richard Branson did. Sister Helen Prejean, she's one of the biggest anti-death row advocates. She came to his side to support him. Dr. Phil, he was featured on the Dr. Phil show. All these people, I think, started seeing the huge issue of this case. And the thing that I'm probably most proud of is that he's the reason like all these people got involved. He wrote probably over hundreds and hundreds of letters to every media place, every judge, every Innocence Project, famous people. He nonstop wrote letters to get these people to pay attention. And once people started paying attention, it was easier for people who are famous to look into it because there was so much talk. He corresponded with John McCain for a little bit too. John McCain was on his side. He really did the work to get all these people to look into his case.
Awesome. Okay. That's a really, really good thing. So there are a lot of people that stepped up collaboratively and he should have been given the stay anyways, but sometimes it just happens to take, you know, this public effort and get the media involved and let other people see what's going on and cause enough of a stink. Well, maybe if so-and-so is saying it, we should really listen to it. Sorry, it has to be that way. But any way that we can stop somebody from being executed who is an innocent person, then within the confines of the law, you know, this was being done. And thank goodness. So that's three times.
Exactly.
Three times.
Yeah.
Three times where he was okay. So, and again, you know, this is why, you know, we get out here and we talk. And it could be that somebody heard he's innocent or somebody else is innocent. You know, it could be the 50th time, but all of a sudden somebody really tunes into it and why. You know, and then,
yeah.
So we start educating people when they are ready to listen. Things happen differently. So that's why we need to get these messages there and these predetermined notions of somebody must have done it have to stop. I don't think you, me, or anybody in this advocacy here is condoning bludgeoning anybody to death. I don't think anybody is saying that people should not be punished for their crimes. But why should the wrong person be punished?
Yeah.
And the truth be swept aside all this time.
A long time.
In a long, long time. So, okay. So now let's move forward a little bit. How is Richard doing? What is his demeanor? What, you know, can you give us a snapshot of that?
Mm-hmm. He's doing really well. He's a really positive person, sometimes so positive I don't even know how he stays that positive, but he's good. He's confident about his future. He's confident in his legal team. He sticks to a routine that he does every day where he keeps himself busy. And of course we talk a lot and he's doing well. He's doing really well given his situation.
Okay. Okay. So does he see himself a free man?
Yes, he, yes, absolutely does.
Okay. Oh, that sends tingles down my spine and goosebumps
I
up
know.
My arms.
I know.
You know, and if it does that to me, I can imagine how you feel and how
exactly
he feels. And all of his team of supporters that have stood by his innocence all this time, going to be so rewarding when he is finally set free. But that being said, what makes this team of lawyers now any different from all the others?
The thing that makes them the most different, they did the work. They've been looking into this and investigating since 2015, and now it's 2019, and they've uncovered so much, and there's such a bigger story that is eventually going to come out that they actually did the work that should have been done back then. So that's what makes them different, is they've really given this their all, which is we're obviously very appreciative of.
Mm-hmm. And those people that so adamantly know and believe stepped up to the plate in whatever way
mm-hmm.
that they could and promoted this happening to save an innocent man from being ingested to death whenever that is the hunter, you know, gets his way. And if it wasn't for these people standing up, he would have been gone by now. But
yes.
Now there's been a great deal of supporters that have helped financially, it's my understanding, as well as some groups. So this is why it's really important for people to unite together, get to know the truth, and say, not happening on my time. No siree.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody can do the same thing. Not everybody, you know, is capable for it,
right.
of it, you know, but just helping in whatever way people can for the sake of humanity, for the sake of accountability for those that have had him in jail for over 2 decades in prison on death row. So, okay, so now something else that I have believed for a long time is that you're going to be hard-pressed for defending yourself with an Oklahoma law firm. From what I have learned and what I know, there have been many lawyers in the past, probably, you know, going forward, who knows, there have been many lawyers that were either blacklisted or threatened to be blacklisted and other things while they came on as a defense team and prior to the trial to prove innocence and then did not go forward. Unfortunately, this really does happen. This is very archaic. I don't care. People are walking around in suits. People can, you know, put whatever they want out there, become a member of whatever board. But yet, these things are beyond a shadow of a doubt what should have the corruptors of the system in prison, behind bars. Not
Definitely.
The Richard Glossop, not the Tommy Gortz, not the Daniel Holtzclaws, not the Vince Wilmoth, not all these other countless victims of public corruption. So that's why, I'll circle back around to this, it's a really good idea to get a law firm that can practice in Oklahoma, does not go in front of that judge, that prosecutor, does not work with people on a regular basis. Get one outside of Oklahoma so that that lawyer and that firm is pissed off and will stand up and will do the right thing and not be threatened to be blacklisted or make deals at the cost of somebody else's life. And that's exactly what has happened in your husband's case and why the confidence is there. Am I right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Okay. So what have you learned about Oklahoma misconduct?
I've learned that it is more corrupt than I think I thought going into this. Because I've heard stories about Oklahoma even before I got with my husband. But after being with him and understanding actually what happened and then hearing about other people in Oklahoma whose loved ones have gone through this too, it really is a different situation that you don't think people are still like that. Like, you really would not think that these people would work so hard to put the wrong person there. Just to me, it kind of circles to I don't think they care enough, like, to find the right person. If you have a person and you want to further yourself in your, whether it be your political career, your reputation, whatever it may be, you just put a person behind bars. It doesn't matter to you if it's the wrong one or not. I think it's to further their careers, especially with capital cases. The more people you put to death, it makes you look better as a prosecutor, which my husband believes very fully, which is part of the reason he feels so strongly about it. So I think it's just a matter of wanting to further yourself instead of caring about these lives you're messing with.
Right. Right. So, you know, let's close this case up. Let's close it up. We've got something else that happened that we need to pay attention to. One and done. One and done, and we're not going back, and, you know, we're just not going to let you this and that and the other thing. So, Richard has had how many appeals now?
He's had quite a few, and they've all, I don't remember the exact number, but all of them have been denied, so he ran out of them.
So he's run out of appeals.
He has no appeals. He has no clemency. That's why this is like the only shot he has with these new attorneys, because he's exhausted everything else.
So then that tells me that what they're doing is not an appeal.
No, it is not. It's filing new evidence. The only way to get him out when all your appeals are exhausted is to file new evidence that has not already been showed in previous trials. So that's what they've been working on for the last 4 years, and they will file that with the court to get a hearing, which will then, they'll present the evidence, and a judge will have the final say.
And the judge will have the final say. But all of the evidence will be brought forward.
Yes.
That has yet to be brought forward. So I'm just going to say, you know, and I know we talked about that, but our listeners weren't part of the conversation. So what the heck taking so long? 4 years.
I think it's since it is the last shot, essentially they found an overwhelming amount of stuff, overwhelming amount of evidence. So, and it's a matter of going through each individual thing, talking to people, filing things, doing this, doing that. It's really paying very close attention to every single thing, making sure it's all right, because they do only have one chance. And it has taken a very long time. And Rich has been so patient, which is kind of the craziest thing. It doesn't bother him that it's taken this long, because he knows it's the one shot that they have, so he'd rather them take their time and do it right than rush and end up having a mishap and he'll be stuck there forever. So it's a good thing they're taking a long time, actually, because that means they're doing their job well.
I totally agree. They're coming in and they're going to annihilate the prosecution with what
yes.
has yet to be presented, and there will be no choice. There should
exactly.
be no choice. There can be no choice. This is such a public trial, such a public case, that this 30, how old is he now?
He just turned 56.
56-year-old man from the time, more than 2 decades in prison on death row. So what's a few more years when you need to get it right?
Yeah, it needs to be done right. That's the main thing.
So are you able to share any of those things at all that will be in front of that court that we don't know about?
No, probably not, just because we want to keep it so under wraps, just in
total.
Case someone were to try and, yeah, yeah.
Total respect
but it will,
for that. Total respect
yeah.
for that. And,
it
and
will
you
come
know,
out, though.
I just did that because listeners are probably like, What is it? Well, now
no,
we
yeah.
know.
yeah.
Now
yeah.
we know it could actually cause, we don't want to show, right? They're not willing to show cards so somebody can come in and disrupt
exactly.
anything.
Yeah.
It's already quite a task, and it's a good thing because there's so much to bring to that court.
Exactly.
So
yeah, and it will
judge. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say it will all come out soon enough. Everyone will definitely know the full story soon enough.
You sound very at ease, at peace, and confident with that. And I can't begin to tell you how happy I am, because you know what it tells me? That, you know, this is going to help save others' lives.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
You know, people need to perk up when they hear, no, that's not right. This person was wrong. Guess what? Maybe sometimes that's going to be a lie. Maybe that won't be accurate or true. But guess what? You'll find out if you just look. You'll find
exactly.
out if you just listen. Out of all the people that I have spoken with and have reached out to me over the last few years, asking me to take interest and, you know, help, you know, promote advocacy and whatnot, I've had maybe 2 or 3 people that I would ask questions. You know, because something didn't sound right, I asked questions anyways, of course, as you know. But when something didn't sound right, I would ask them to show me something, to send me something. And those people I never heard back from. So, you know, So, okay, nice try. Did not work. So we can't believe everything that we hear. And that's the point.
Exactly, yeah.
We can't believe everything that we hear. We need to take the time, or at least do not form an opinion unless you have taken that time, a little bit of time, just to see for yourself or hear why this person is innocent or why that didn't really happen. And it might touch you enough that you get involved. And
yeah.
that touched you enough. It touched you enough. You got
involved.
It
definitely
involved.
Did. yeah.
You got involved. So, as you have been involved in this, what other cases have you learned of that you know, seeing glaringly wrong, that have been in the spotlight or in the headlines or been put out there or are now? Talk to me about what you feel, you know, is going on with others that are claiming innocence.
I think that there are definitely a few cases where I don't think, well, I'd say they are innocent because, all right, in Texas, for example, there's a lot of men who are on death row who have been convicted under the law of parties, meaning they did not physically kill the person. They were not in the vicinity of killing the person. However, they were with someone who did, or they were the getaway driver. They were something. So then they, in turn, get the same sentence. I think there's like four or five of them on Texas now that I know I don't think should be there. There's even a few people who have already been executed, unfortunately, who I do believe were innocent too. So it's a lot. I learned that, especially after like researching this more and stuff, that there's a lot of innocent people in prison and on death row. There's a lot more than I think people realize, which is kind of scary.
That's really scary. That is really scary. And
yeah,
you know, so you just never know. It could happen to you or somebody that you love, as if it's not enough that it's happening to anybody at all.
Exactly.
So do you feel that there's a lack of what? Like you mentioned these Texas cases, like what do you see that is in common that's going wrong?
The main thing probably is, like I said earlier, the initial investigators not doing the work to figure out all the facts, or not looking mm-hmm. into exactly what happened, or the crime scene, or whatever other aspects of the crime there was, not fully looking into it. It's like once they have one person and they slap the guilty verdict on them, they don't look at anything else. They're guilty before they even have the trial. And I've noticed that more and more, and I just think that's a huge problem.
That's a huge problem. And then what are you finding that happens as far as, you know, when it's brought to the media? Do you feel that they're just doing their job, or that maybe they should do a better job? Like I'm wondering, when there's so many cases, and I know that, like, Tulsa World in Oklahoma, that the Oklahoman mm-hmm. in Oklahoma, they turn their back. Stories that should be on the front, on the headlines, okay? Front page
yeah.
headlines, okay? I'm going to say it as it is. You know, I can just lay out plenty of stuff, you know, and yet they'll bring out this sensational, stupid stuff, and then,
right.
you know, you show them something like a RICO scheme going on in Tulsa District Courts with judges and certain lawyers on common, okay? And you say, I got this here, I got this there, you know, are you willing to this? Are you willing to that? Nope. What do you mean? What do you mean? Or they ignore you. Same thing as Attorney General Hunter. They don't want
yeah,
anything
definitely.
To do with it. So
I think a lot of that stems from them not wanting to admit they're wrong. I feel like the people there have a huge problem with, like, even with not just my husband's case, just other cases where, because there's been a few men exonerated from death row since my husband's been there. And the people, people in power have never admitted that they messed up with these cases.
Right.
I think that's just denial on their part.
Well, Steve, and that's the thing. If they know that they messed up, then that would have been corrected. You
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying? But instead, they don't. They oppress
exactly.
the truth. They, as in the Holtz Law case, you know, are waiting for an answer for an appeal for 2+ years now, I believe.
That's ridiculous.
2+ years. It's like, uh-oh, who's going to take that? Wait until I retire. Hold on. What the heck is going on? What is going on? You know, well, we know what's going on, and it's not okay,
yeah.
right? It's just not okay. You know, I mean, we've got this huge issue, and that's why, you know, this rally on the 14th is something that is a consistent message that will all circle around every time we have another rally each quarter. The next rally should be in May, and it'll be about guardianship abuse, so the elder abuse. theft of human beings from elder, from older to young children, babies even.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that, you know, theft of estates, multi-millions of dollars, thefts of estates, and some people are put on a measly $50 a month allowance. And where's all the other money going? Where's the money going? Well, so this is the problem. This is because we have public corruption taking place.
Yeah.
We have abuse of power, constitutional, our Bill of Rights are being violated, and we cannot give that permission for that to happen anymore. So, you know, people are threatened, though. It's pretty darn scary to get out and talk about it, but we have to. We have
to. It has to be talked about, yeah.
Yeah. So this group where Richard Glossop is not guilty, I think that's what it's called, right?
Richard Glossop is innocent, yeah.
Okay, Richard, that's even better. Richard Glossop is innocent. So anybody who's interested in following that group, is that the group that you would suggest?
Yeah, that's the main group, okay. Yeah.
Richard Glossop is innocent. Go ahead, throw in your support, or do a little bit of research. Do a little bit of research before you throw in support and form your own opinions.
Yes.
And then
yes,
you will undoubtedly throw in your support when you see the truth, okay? And again, we've got the same thing with Daniel Holtzclaw. That Daniel Holtzclaw team, you know, find him on Facebook. Stop the eye rolling for anybody who's rolling the eyes, okay? We've got a man who is sentenced to life, a couple of lives, who has to be in an undisclosed place because of his own safety, because he's a police officer. Well, that's a public servant. Yes, it is. But he is not involved in public corruption. He is a victim of public corruption. And there are other police officers that are willing to stand by him, and we need more. Throw in your support. When you throw in your support, listeners, for anybody that you believe to be innocent, and you can confirm that that is more the case than not, then you are a part of saving lives, okay? Not just one, not just two, but then you are a part of helping turn the wrongs in the system into right and holding the public corruptors accountable. And that's where we need to do more than just tell our story, but what are we going to do about it? And you were already doing something about it, Leah, when you took interest, when your head practically like snapped out of socket and you said, what? You know,
yes.
You're already following other cases, and this one intrigued you. So how do you see your future with this amazing man?
I see.
What do you guys want to do?
We definitely want to go. We don't want to stay in Oklahoma, obviously. We're probably going to go somewhere new. He wants to just live really simply. I think we're going to have it really good because we've been through a lot individually and as a couple since we've been on this journey together. So I do think that it's not all for nothing, and we will be rewarded for the struggles that we have now. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be good.
Okay. And obviously there is going to be breathing room needed. You know, there's no doubt about that. I mean, he's going to just be like,
yes.
Wow,
yes.
Look at this green grass, blue skies, and gorgeous ocean or mountains or whatever it is. And is this real? He's going to probably keep asking you to pinch him. You know,
he probably
but,
will. yeah.
So what is it that he said once all the dust settles down, if there's any such thing after so much has been taken away from him? What is the silver lining here? Like, what does he want his message to be?
Yeah, his message, he probably wants it to be to keep fighting, because he fought this entire time. He wasn't like this known person for majority of his sentence. He's only recently gotten known recently, and that was because he did the work. He didn't give up. So he really has fought super, super hard, and I know that's what he encourages people, his friends down there too. He would encourage other people out here too. Just whatever it is, you got to keep at it, even when things aren't going your way, because he had a lot of not go his way before things did turn around. And so it would probably be to just not give up no matter how hard it gets.
Right. So that's, you feel like that is the a message that he wants to send. Do you think he wants to do something with all this, like be supportive of other people, or, you know, tell his story, or, you know, he's probably, you know what, first things first, right? You know, let's just relax and exhale and breathe first. But I imagine that he's going to want to, you know, do exactly what you said, really, just be there.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he wants to help a lot of people. He wants to speak out a lot about this, and he has a different perspective to talk about it because he lived it, and he wants to do a lot with it. He wants to make a lot of changes, or try to make a lot of changes in the world. So,
right. And you know, it's funny, and one of those changes that we need to make, guess what? It's right in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
And Tina Gortz, you know, the key rally. A person, you know, whose husband, organizer, whose husband, you know, has been, you know, she's been dealing with this, and she's been an advocate for wrongful convictions. Well, she just said to me, interesting, the innocent in Oklahoma want to get out of the state ASAP. You think?
Exactly.
You
cannot pay him to stay in Oklahoma after this.
Okay, so all right, now we're about ready to wrap it up. I really want to thank you for being here on this show and sharing the truth. And what is it that you want in about 15 seconds to share with the listeners?
Probably just to do the research and look into this case and educate yourselves and be supportive, because we need all the support we could get. It's going to get very crazy very soon. It definitely will.
Yep. Thank you for that. And sometimes, in order to realize the justice that we all deserve, civil and humane treatment on this earth, right? Sometimes it gets harder before it gets better. So we need to go through it together. So what I'm asking everybody to do is to follow, pay attention to Richard Glossop, his innocent page. Look up the Daniel Holtzclaw case, or Daniel Holtzclaw is innocent page. Follow Journeys to Justice Facebook page and Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed Facebook page, and come to that doggone rally if you can. We need you. We need your voice. We need your presence. If you have questions, let us know. Email me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. Thank you, everybody, so much for tuning in, and we will be back again next Sunday night at the same time, and where we will have the Holtzclaw team on. I believe that's the third. So it'll be Erica Fuchs, who is a biologist, and we will have a police officer, and his name is Jason Angel. On behalf of the Holtzclaw team, please tune in. God bless everybody. Thank you so much, and good night.